Welcome back to the Talk Shop. I'm Purple Chop, joined today by...
It always goes to you first.
Okay.
It always goes to you.
Joined today by Corey Slavic Donut Jamnik.
And Sam, the Big Irish Man Center.
I think we're...
Nice announcer voice there.
I think we're using the word man a little liberally now.
That's as close as I will ever get to being a sportser.
All right. This is kind of episode 3.5 because we had some technical troubles.
I don't know what you're talking about. We just went on a week vacation. We just didn't have an episode.
We were in Hawaii, all of us. Nothing gay about it.
Totally.
Every joke you hear and everything is a lie because we've done this before.
Yeah.
It's not genuine. Art is a lie. God is dead. Rome is burning.
So it was a big shame, though, because that episode was actually pretty good that we lost.
It was, yeah.
I thought. So you'll never get to hear it. So there. But we're going to kind
of... You could interspace some of the audio here just so they can see what you're talking about.
Maybe I'll pop in some.
You have an option. So it sounds like... It sounds like we've been taken over by androids.
Yeah, well, everyone, this is what you were missing.
And then there's going to be...
Hungry eyes.
If I still have it, I might have deleted it.
Oh,
well. Not 100% sure.
Then this will all get cut out. Or it'll be left in. There's been a lot of times you've left things in where we're like, oh, we'll edit that out.
Oops.
That's just the way the news goes.
Oh, it doesn't bother me at all. It's funny every time. I think the one I'm thinking of is where I accidentally said Red Alert 3 the first time.
Oh, yeah.
And we're like, that'll just get edited
just
out.
Backpedal.
It's still in there.
Usually sometimes, or most of the time I leave it in because there's a joke in there. Like it's something funny. And then if we reference it later or it's even a couple seconds later, then it's harder to cut out without losing a bunch of context. So everything sounds
like
disjointed.
Or we can just be a bunch of lunatics making jokes that make no sense.
Yeah.
Let's just have a moment here while we're on the subject.
Of silence for the last episode?
No.
Oh.
I tend to be the one that takes the piss out of everybody.
Yep.
So, and I know that. And
that's why
I don't...
Careful with
the P word. That's why my circle of friends has basically come down to you guys and the cats I have at home. But I do want to take a moment, speaking of editing, to say thank you to Tom for taking the time to do that.
Ooh,
and shucks. For making the episodes.
Yeah, no problem.
So, easy peasy. I have a feeling I'm
going to...
Thanks,
man.
I have this philosophy that maybe if I'm nice before I know I'm going to be a dick... people will be like, he's a jerk, but he did.
It's a spoonful of sugar with the medicine.
That is the best way to put it.
There
you go. That right there. I don't know that I'm going to be a dick
today. I may or may not edit it so you sound worse than you actually do.
He just fills it with bleeps.
To me, I'm not going to say it.
Every joke I have gets edited so that the timing's way up. Every setup I do,
sound like you're yelling halfway through someone's sentence.
Censor random words to make him sound like just the most horrible, like, sewer dwelling.
But hey, we should also start off by saying thank you to all of our listeners. We're at 45 downloads.
Hey, that's...
Whoa. That's actually way better than I thought it
that's
would be.
That's way better than I would have thought we would have ever done.
I mean, it would have been eight of those are probably mine, but, you know.
YOLO.
I can take ownership for one each. I mean, I listen to us.
Yeah, one each. Yeah.
I like to listen to myself talk.
If you are listening out there, thank you.
Tell your friends. You owe it to us.
Yep.
And yourself. All right, so do we want to get down to it?
I don't know. Should we? Are we doing like a what'd you do this week?
Oh, I wanted to do a. I wanted to talk about the classic rock thing.
Sure.
Okay.
Because
this is the musical podcast, everybody.
Yeah, we're doing.
Oh yeah.
So last podcast was supposed to be top three albums, like our personal top three albums. The audio got screwed. That's not coming out. But we're gonna do it again this week. But because it's gonna be hard to do the same conversations over again about those albums without just it being really weird for us. We're also doing our top three songs, and those are going to be more elaborated on so that we can still kind of have that discussion.
Let's keep it fresh for us.
Lost of time. Yeah.
We didn't want to come in here and try to do like the exact same episode again.
It's weird. You just can't do it.
Yeah.
But I was listening to Van Halen yesterday.
Oof.
And I made the realization that, I mean, this isn't like world-changing view of the world, but I never consumed music at a time, or I should say as a consumer, like bought music at a time when you didn't know what an album was like until you bought it.
Oh, I did.
Where like you just heard a song on the radio and you're like, that's a good song. And then you bought the album and you were like, what did I do?
I'm from those days, man. I got burnt.
So if you're a band, so you're like Van Halen wrote a ton of music.
Mm-hmm.
They wrote a bunch of music. And they wrote enough music to fill a greatest hits album with really good songs. But there were never more than two of those songs on any single album.
Yep.
So they were just like, they wrote two good songs and they're like, all right, now we got to make money. All right, just write 11 pieces of trash.
That's filler, man. That's notorious in the music business. That was the studio executives usually would want an album to come out because, hey, these kids are making money.
Yeah.
And so they would kind of just force the bands to write singles, the ones that we're going to sell, and then just whatever they can get out the door.
It's even worse now. Like,
whatever you can write in 3 months.
If an artist is going to release an album, they basically pick their single beforehand. They're like, this is going to be the single. This is the one we'll
And they don't even write it themselves. They write it with
half the time. It's like a group of old men.
Yep.
What's trending today? Bass. All about it. Then they write that song.
Yeah, like women empowerment songs. Like, I'm not going to get... Oh, I'm not going to say it's good or bad, but right now, women empowerment is what it's all about. Every song is some girl saying...
This is my fight song.
You're beautiful no matter what. It's a terrible message, first of all. And I'm not saying that, like, women should be forced to be skinny or anything like that, but guess what? Chances are you have some flaws. Mm-hmm. Everybody.
Yeah.
Men, women, children. Everybody has flaws.
It's just a horrible thing to do to someone, to tell them that there is nothing wrong with them.
Exactly.
That's just I think that's a genuinely immoral thing to do to someone.
It's a lot harder to sell a song.
It's to convince them that their flaws are either non-existent or even on the other end beneficial to them somehow.
Yeah.
No, and just absolutely. Completely indulge everybody.
It's a lot harder to sell a song that's like, you're okay, I guess. You have some things to improve. Don't get too cocky. You can do better.
There was a Bo Burnham song on his last special that was like that. It started off with obvious, like, men's unrealistic expectations of women, and then that was the first verse and chorus, and then the second verse and chorus was the other way around. It was really good.
I've heard it. It is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's a problem in we celebrate our flaws in American society. And there's nothing wrong with taking ownership and not trying to hide your flaws.
Yeah.
But let's face it. Like I've said at the beginning of this episode, there's almost a theme already coming up. I know that I'm a dick. One of my best friends now admitted that he said that he thought I was a complete douche the first time he met me.
Who is this?
I don't know if I want to put his name out. Okay, I don't know if he'd be comfortable with that.
Yeah, we can talk about afterwards.
Bleeping.
But I know that it's actually like a defense mechanism. Like, when I meet people, I immediately try to annoy them.
You know what's funny? Before I ever met you, I was with Tom, and he was going to introduce me to you. That's the disclaimer he gave me, is that he said, you're going to think he's a dick at first, but that's just the way he is.
It's accurate.
That's what Tom told me.
But I've seen
and
that.
Boy, was he right.
I still think that to this day.
But I don't think that's something to be celebrated. I don't think that that's something I should be proud of.
I mean, it's not malicious or mean-spirited. I think that... all the time. Unless you really don't like the person.
So, like, I'm trying to work on that. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to do better. It's not going very well. But for me to... Like, on Facebook, you see all these memes going around that are... Especially, I don't know, in the veteran community. I don't know. Everywhere, but no, it's like
I'm not really hooked into that side of the world.
Funny enough,
I think it's spread everywhere. I've seen it from non-veterans too, where it's like, I'm gonna be a dick, but that's just how I am. Oh, and it's like a picture of a face, like,
we know someone like that. I mean, we can just straight up bleep it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
That was who I was thinking of when sometimes I just tear somebody apart that I meet.
As soon as you said that, that's the interaction I was thinking of, was with that person, with like, Mr. Bleeperton.
I'm going to leave that in and bleep it so that everybody listening is like, oh, is it me?
Yeah.
Do they think that
that's
about
really
me?
Good. If it's only our friends listening to this, we're all going to wonder.
I mean, how many people have you been with that you actually legitimately ripped into?
I can think of that time and one other time.
So there's going to, if one of those people listens to it, they're going to be like, yeah, that guy was a dick. They're not going to like wonder if it was them. They're going to be like, yeah, that was totally me.
I really don't think I've come across well to the Dungeons and Dragons group that used to come here, because I was friends with a lot of them before I started playing Dungeons and Dragons with them. And actually they've all unfriended me since.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Geez.
All of them.
That I can.
What
think.
About the Warhammer?
Like, researched
one.
It really hard.
Without saying his name, the Warhammer guy.
I'm still friends with him.
Okay.
Yeah. He actually is a lot like me in that we're both just terrible to the people around us until you get through our crusty exteriors, and then we're only kind of horrible. We're like a meal that starts out too hot and then is too cold, and you just leave it on the plate, and you're like, well, it's what I ordered.
All right.
Music.
Album.
Music.
Let's do a quick run through of our top albums. I actually changed mine. Retconning a little bit. I'm sorry.
Cool.
I was looking at.
Are we still doing honorable mentions, or
I listed the
not
ones
for albums,
that I really wanted to
songs
mention.
You can maybe
okay.
Like we should just breeze through the songs or the albums. Right. I mean,
all right.
Should we just? Does each person just want to go through their top three in a row?
No, I think it's more fun if you do a roundabout.
Okay, yeah,
that's
okay.
My opinion.
That's fine.
Shakes it up for the listener. They're not stuck with one voice for.
Yep. I mean, who wants to hear any of our voices for more than like 30-second increments?
Mom always said I had a face for radio and a voice for comics.
A voice for print.
Yeah, that'd be better.
Brent is dead.
Anyway. Who wants to kick it off?
I'll start.
Yeah. All right.
Number three. Corey seems excited. Let's let him go.
Number three, Rust in Peace. Megadeth album. Really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's say all it a bit say. Clear.
Like, are we? Well, I mean, are we?
I'm elaborating a little bit.
Well, okay.
We have to remember, nobody listening to this heard this before.
No, yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. I like it because, I mean, there's the story of...
Can you say it again? It was like Megadeth.
Rust in Peace by Megadeth.
There we go.
That's the one.
kind of a victory story for Dave Mustaine, who is Megadeth, basically. There's been like 20 past members of that band. There's like... the past members of Megadeth has its own Wikipedia page. So, and so it's just him. And he got kicked off Metallica, basically made them big. And so then he went later on. And when Metallica made their first misstep in like this trash album, he came out with Rust in Peace, which was not even arguably really his best album. It was really good.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good
Wait,
album.
Are you saying it was his best album?
Yeah, I think it was.
Okay. Why do you phrase that kind of confusing?
I don't know anybody who would argue that any other albums are better than that one.
Yeah, I think that's Megadeth's peak. There's a couple.
There's other really good ones.
Yeah, I think that was definitely.
Is that considered metal?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thrash metal. Because in terms of metal and classic rock, I'm never really going to have much of an opinion because those are not my fortes at all.
Yep.
I don't think I've ever even heard Rust in Peace.
I can send you a few songs.
I'm always open to hear something, but my interest is very low.
Yeah, no, I get it. Send for everyone. Yeah.
Plus, you'll have to get over his voice. It's actually one of the
that's
most
what turns me
voices.
Off. He's the hello me.
Yeah, you know what's so great about Dave Mustaine? Every human being alive can do a good Dave Mustaine impression.
You just gotta sound like you're taking a crap.
He doesn't have one of those voices that only some people can do.
Is he really here right
now? Dave, is that you?
Dave?
Bedeen it.
First celebrity guest star.
Bedeen it. All right, over to Tom.
Okay.
Number three.
My number three is the album Fragile by the band Yes. They're basically the proggiest prog rock band that ever progged. and this album is a perfect example of that. It's just, you know, it's progressive rock. That's pretty much all there is to it. I mean, if you've heard Rush, think more bizarre.
Are we talking? Okay. Rush is a spectrum, though. Rush is like, there's like Radio Rush. There's a few of those songs. Yeah. And then there's like way deep into the prog Rush.
Yeah. I guess it's kind of the same for Yes. They do have some songs that could be on the radio.
And are they at all comparable to Tom Sawyer? Tom Sawyer is the one prog rock song that I actually really stand by. I not only like it, but I love it.
Listen to the first song on this album. It's called Roundabout.
Okay.
I've heard it on the radio. It's really good. Like, it's actually one of my favorite songs, but that's not, didn't make the list. Spoiler alert. But yeah, I'd advise checking it out. It's just a very dense album. When you listen to a song, there's a lot of stuff going on, and they do a lot of interesting experimentation with instruments and their voices and stuff. It's just an interesting listen.
Awesome.
And that's all I have to say about that.
Fair enough.
All right, so my number three, I just want to start by saying that, like, basically I have three kinds of music that I really like. It's indie rock, hip-hop, and punk rock. And so when I started trying to make my list, I was trying to find representations of all those main genres of music, because it's really hard to limit everything you've ever heard into favorites, because we all consume a lot of music.
Yep.
I know that for a fact. But so when I was trying to think of my indie rock spot, I had some honorable mentions. I'll mention Cake Fashion Nugget is a great little funky album.
I love that album.
Very close to getting on here. Anything by Death Cab for Cutie would have probably been.
I really like them, actually.
Oh, there's only one album by them I don't like. I don't remember what it's called, but it was really. It was after. It's either after Transatlanticism or after.
Codes and Keys?
No, Codes and Keys was
bad.
Because
Codes and Keys was pretty good.
Yeah, I like Codes and Keys. It was like The Stairs or Photo something. Stairway.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
I don't remember, that's one of
the lesser ones.
Yeah.
That didn't really have any of the hits on it that everybody knows.
No, yeah.
But it's pretty good.
I don't remember that one.
Arcade Fire Funeral is one that I actually kind of forgot about until I started looking into my indie rock collection. That one's actually really good.
Yeah.
I like Neon Bible better, I think. Is it Neon Bible?
Yeah, Neon Bible is an Arcade Fire.
I have that on vinyl because I'm cool.
Wow. Can I have your autograph?
Absolutely.
The one that did make the list, I think, does deserve it, though, and it is Modest Mouse, Good News for People Who Love Bad News.
That's a really good album.
That's a solid choice.
I really think. This is an album I started listening to when I was, I think, 15, 14. And most of the music I was listening to around that time, I grew out of. Mm-hmm. This is Modest Mouse in general is a band that I kind of feel like I grew into a little bit.
Yeah.
They have a very nihilistic sound and lyric composition. It's like everything they do.
Kind of like a pseudo disco sound too.
Yeah.
For their music.
It's I really like odd. It.
I heard about them through Rock Band 2, funny enough, because Flodon's on Rock Band
2. Yeah, that was on, what was that album?
That's
this one. Flodon was on.
Oh, was it? What was the We Were Dead Before something?
That one has like Dashboard Melted, but We Still Have the Radio.
Yeah. That's a good album.
Yeah, we drowned before the ship even sank or something.
That sounds right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
they're very catchy. A lot of indie rock and prog rock and all these other things tend to not be as catchy as I prefer. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty plebeian, like what I like. It has to have a hook to really dig in. So I have a hard time with experimental stuff. Mm-hmm. There's always exceptions or stuff I like, but more or less it has to have a good catchy beat to really hook me in. Some key tracks that I wanted to mention for anybody listening are like The World at Large, great song. Mm-hmm. Ocean Breeze Salty would be on my top three songs list that we're going to be going into. But I had a rule that I couldn't include anything mentioned previously or get kind of redundant.
That's and, what I kind of did too.
Yep. I could do the same.
And then The Good Times Are Killing Me, which is the closer on the track.
That's
that
a good
one,
song.
That's
actually
a great song.
I love that song.
Yeah. That's everything I have to say about that one.
All number two.
My number two, I don't have to look. I'm pulling out my phone for the list, but I remember. was Hot Fuss by The Killers.
That's a great choice.
It really is. I love that album. I've listened to it. And this is, I should say, I said this last week on the album, the podcast isn't going to come on, that these next two, this Killers album and then the next album that I'm going to pick for my number one are really good albums, but they're not the ones that I would pick currently as my favorites or the ones that I like to listen to the most because I've listened to them to death and I just can't take the songs anymore.
Right.
But just by virtue of the fact that I like them as much as I did at the time, more than I like any of the other stuff now.
Like a pedigree in your life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so... not what I would choose right now, but overall, it's not even close. Hot Fuss, every single song from beginning to end is tremendous. It's probably, I tried to think this week of a better debut album, and I just can't think of one from a band. It's just so absurdly good.
Every song on there is worth listening to.
Every song is like a top 40 hit.
It grabs your attention, too.
Yeah.
What I love about it, because, I mean, I heard The Killers before I even knew who The Killers was. It was on Fuse TV, and it was just on in the background. And it was that somebody told me that you have a boyfriend who looks like a girlfriend that I had in February of last year. Mm-hmm. Hearing that immediately, that grabs you. You're like, and it's so catchy and alive when they're doing it with the synth and everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're like, what is that? I need to know. And so that was one that I actually, it was right when I was learning to drive. Or when I got my driver's license, and I actually drove into town as soon as I heard that song and bought the album. And then I just cruised around our city listening to it. And it's great from start to finish. That's one, when you mentioned it last time we made this, I almost wanted to just put on my list to like smack you in the face.
It would have been, and for a band like The Killers, it's easy in that kind of genre of music to keep writing the same song over and over, or to make everything sound the same and not really that unique, but they just keep writing really, really cool, interesting songs that sound similar but are just so interesting and unique and distinct from each other. Like, it doesn't all just, you know, how like it easily could have been an album with two good songs like we were talking about before, and the rest is just trash.
Yeah
The but strange thing I think about that is most bands don't start at their highest point. Like, I think they've been steadily going downhill, because their most recent album really was, it was The Killers trying to sound like The Killers. Yeah. I think I said that last week. But
We should stop saying that we said last week, because like nobody's going to know.
I think I said that last week.
Okay, we're saying it for the benefit of each other, because just instinctively it sounds like we're repeating ourselves or saying something unoriginal. But in this context, we know that that's a perfectly okay thing to do.
We'll just consider it a rehearsal. An interesting thing about The Killers is that they weren't a band that started out in a garage or anything like that. Corey's giving me a look because, yes, I did say all of this last week.
I'm sorry, man.
I can't look at him in the face.
Please go on.
I'm trying to make it sound like it's off the cuff.
Oh, yes, please go on.
There were two guys who got together, and they were good looking, and they went to the studio, and the only song they'd written was Mr. Brightside, which, to be fair, is a great song to have written. Like, if you're going to write a song and go to a studio, go with Mr. Brightside. Yeah. But the studio wanted to put together like the first band of all male models. They wanted just a really good-looking band from Las Vegas to, to tour around the world. And so they did that. They got a bunch of good-looking guys. But when they got them up on stage, because they hadn't come up like through clubs, and like, you know, you kind of have to earn your place when you're starting as a band, because they just kind of got pushed into it, they had zero stage presence. and they were so bad that the studios had to like make like almost a rock summer camp where they brought in all these people in to teach them how to perform.
That already exists. It's called Camp Rock, starring the Jonas Brothers, I think. What? Haven't you ever seen that movie? I only watch it every day.
Are the killers in it?
No, but they should be. They could learn a thing or two from the Joe Bros.
The Joe Bros.
So they had to be taught not to just stand there like frozen fish.
Yeah. And it was really bad. I can remember seeing them on Saturday Night Live when Mr. Brightside was first on the radio. And literally, I think Brendan Flowers is the name of the lead singer. Mm-hmm. He's just standing there. He's like, coming out of my cage because I've been doing just fine. Gotta be down. And you're like, dude, move.
Is this animatronic?
It was like one of those Chuck E. Cheese bands. The keyboard's just...
How great would it be if they actually were, and halfway through the song, they walked out. The actual people walked out, kicked over the robots.
And then they played the exact same as the robots.
The much uglier but much more talented people are behind the curtain actually singing and doing
they're puppeting.
It's one acne-strewn weirdo coming out of my cage.
All right, Tom, how about your number two?
All right, so I swapped out my number two. Last week, my number two was The Who by Numbers is the album. Mm-hmm. And it was it's a solid Who album. It's probably my favorite of The Who. But I swapped it out after thinking back, and we talked about it a little bit. I swapped it to Paul's Boutique by the Beastie Boys.
Great choice.
Which is a super good hip-hop album. It's probably my favorite ever.
I don't listen to that much hip-hop today. Yeah. I didn't think about them until you mentioned them last week.
They're so good.
And then I forgot they existed.
They have like an entire song that's just egg puns. And, you know, they have songs like Hey Ladies or Shake Your Rump. And those are all just great tunes. And they have like the silliest rhymes. And they're actually
is
like
Breast Monkey on that one?
No, that's on a different album.
Oh, I love this. They were American treasures.
Yeah.
There's no other way to put it.
I was legitimately sad when MCA died. Like, my heart ached for them.
Him and then Robin Williams are like the two celebrity deaths where I've like sat down and been like, I'm more sad about this than I should be.
Yeah.
I didn't know them, but yeah, I completely agree. Beastie Boys are the reason why sampling laws exist.
Oh, yeah.
Because when they started doing their albums and they sampled everything, they almost never even wrote music.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had Led Zeppelin samples, and they have a Beatles sample on this album, too.
Yeah.
Which is like, you would never get away with that.
What Beatles song did they sample?
They had, oh, crap, I can't think. It's kind of a random riff from a song.
Okay. But still, you do that today, and your life is over.
Well, you can just see the lawyers heard it, and they were like,
Can they do that? Like, flipping through the
permission? Just.
But yeah, so thanks to the Beastie Boys, there was like a whole new form of... legalization that had to go through. Yeah. Red tape.
It's the Beastie Boys created a form government of regulation.
Tape. That's right. That's what every hip hop band wants.
Like anything, I think there's nothing less Beastie Boys than government regulation.
You gotta fight for your right to legislation.
To sample Beatles songs. Yeah. So that's pretty much all I gotta say about that.
All right. Well, speaking of hip hop,
hippity hop!
Hippity hoppity. In my sockety. We probably can't keep that in.
That's where you bleep beep, in my sockety.
Hip hop was going to be my number two that I really had to address because actually overall, like if we were going to look at the stats overall, hip hop's probably my favorite kind of music. I don't care how pale white I am. I always tell people I'm Irish. I'm the kind of white even other white people don't like. So I'm allowed to listen to hip hop with a little bit of a genuine relation. But I had a hard time choosing which hip hop to do. At first I was thinking Eminem because that's what actually ushered me into hip hop. I think for a lot of white kids living in suburbia, Eminem is kind of like the gateway drug that got them into it. But like I was talking about with the last group is that I kind of grew out of Eminem. There's some songs that do transcend. But a lot of the time, he's just swearing and trying to be. He was like the first original edgelord.
Yeah.
Edgemeister McGee.
Being edgy just wasn't a thing. And he was edgy. So everybody was like, whoa.
It was great when I was 13. It's great when you're 13. But it's hard to listen to for a long time now. So then I thought about doing something a little bit, you know, classic, like Notorious B.I.G. Because I actually love the way he told stories. I love storytelling format in hip hop. I hate ringtone hip hop where it's just big fat booty, big fat booty, big fat booty, here's some money, big fat booty.
Hold on, that's my favorite hip hop song.
Well, let me blow your mind, Tom. I just wrote it.
Are you trying to say E-40 isn't the greatest rapper of all time?
I hope no one's saying that because he is.
And then I thought Kanye West, because I actually Kanye West was really pivotal back in my days, I would listen to him while I was mowing lawns for money and stuff. And actually, before he went insane, he was really good artistically. Now he actually has a legitimate mental disability. He's actually been hospitalized.
Yeah.
And so much makes sense about that. We just got to stop making people so famous.
He's never... Okay, Kanye West has always seemed like a guy who was walking the edge of sanity.
Yeah.
Like, oh... Like, since... like the oldest stuff I've seen from him, like him and Mike Myers,
yeah,
the Hurricane Katrina.
That's great.
Yeah, that is. Go YouTube that if you haven't seen it.
It's just look up Hurricane Katrina, Mike Myers.
It's
Kanye
the first
West.
Thing that'll come up.
Yeah, absolutely.
George Bush doesn't care about black people, and Mike Myers is just trying to keep it moving.
They're all reading off a teleprompter. It's like, we need to reach out and help the families that have been affected by this devastating disaster. And then the camera pans over to Kanye West. George Bush doesn't care about black people.
And then goes back to Mike Myers, and he's like,
yeah, Mike Myers has the most, like, he's got the most, like, white guilt, like, keep your mouth shut, look on his face.
Anyway, so the person I chose for my number two album, he's newer, but I think he's already legitimizing himself as one of the big names in the game. I can say that because I'm talking about hip-hop in the game. Swifty here on the beats, on the fours and sevens. Nah.
Yeah.
Kendrick Lamar, Good Kid, Mad City. His first big debut album. It's not his first one, but his first one that hit the masses. This is so good. It's a concept album. It's about a kid who lives in Compton, who goes to a party, and this girl invites him over to have sex, and he knows he shouldn't go, but he does, and these guys jump him because he's from the wrong side of town, and it's about his friends pick him up in the car afterward, and about the cycle of violence and what they do in response. Really engaging, really powerful stuff.
Does he ever leave straight out of Compton?
There's a song that celebrates Compton at the end, and actually it was produced by Dre. Dre was from what I understand, and this is just on very tangible research. This was on the fringe. I didn't, like, look hard into it. Was that Dr. Dre will go back to Compton because that's where he's from every once in a while. And Kendrick was already building up kind of a following with his music. He was known by a different name. He was K-Dot first. And he just went up to Dr. Dre and was like, hey, listen to this. And Dr. Dre listened to it and actually picked him up because they were from the same city and he recognized the sound. I do know that Dr. Dre produces him. That much is for sure. And they do a song together called Compton. But the best kind of art... overall starts a conversation. Any kind of art, paintings, writing, movies, start a conversation. And what Good Kid, Mad City does is it does about the ghetto and about what we're doing to help that population out, how hopeless the cycle of violence is and how they get dragged into it before they have a chance, because this whole album's about a guy that doesn't want any part of that. He was just trying to get laid like every other teenager on the planet, and he gets sucked in against his will to this life that he doesn't want to be part of. So I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I know what it's like to be in the ghetto. I'm not going to sit here and be like, I'm not going to sit here and say, I listened to Good Kid, Mad City, and now I understand the plight of the minorities. I'm not going to say that. But it does just enough to be a reference point for me to understand a point of view that I wouldn't have had otherwise. And that should be celebrated no matter where it's coming from. Any kind of music that does that should be on everybody's list. So I'm really happy to have Good Kid, Mad City on mine.
Are we ready for number one?
I have to talk about key tracks.
Key tracks.
Yeah. Go for it.
Key tracks that everybody should listen to. Sing About Me is a song that everybody should listen to in the dark when you're feeling reflective or like you want to go over some things that are happening in your life, what your legacy is going to be. Sing About Me is really good. Backstreet Freestyle is just a banger. Hip hop should be a banger.
Shit.
Whose phone?
Wasn't mine. I only got one phone.
All right.
I need two phones.
Should I say some of that stuff again, or are we just going to keep
it in there? No, keep it in there. It's funny.
Okay. That was my phone, guys. My bad.
It's
my boy texting me about steaks we're about to get.
Are they from Omaha?
No, it's Outback.
Same thing.
All right. Anyway, Backstreet Freestyle is a banger. Every good hip-hop album should have a banger. It's got some great lyricism. And I think I'll wrap it up there. Kendrick Lamar, check him out. Everything he does is artistic. I will say that if you heard To Pimp a Butterfly, which was when he was a bit more famous, that was much more experimental. Good Kid, Mad City is catchy. It has better hooks, I would say.
Hmm. It's not like some chick yelling at him over jazz music for 30 seconds.
There's nothing like that. There's nothing like that. Even though that was kind of a cool song. I loved the jazz. I thought that was how the whole album was going to be, and I was kind of bummed out when it wasn't.
Oh, yeah.
But
it's kind of all over the place.
It is.
Not in a bad way, but just kind of... You know, you don't expect it.
But you know, what I like about To Pimp a Butterfly, and I don't mean to keep going off on tangents, I feel like all of my albums are the ones where we spend the most time, is that whole album's about the pressure he felt. Good Kid, Mad City blew up. it went platinum, it went huge, suddenly he was a huge star, kind of like what we did to Kanye West, and everybody handles that differently. To Pimp a Butterfly was his answer to that, in that, you know, the idea of even the name, if I don't want to explain something that everybody already knows, but the idea is that a butterfly is beautiful and something that should be out in the wild, and to pimp that would be to take it and commercialize it, and that's how he felt about his art and the hip-hop. So he's the butterfly, and he felt like the studios were pimping him out, telling him to make more singles and everything. So that's why To Pimp a Butterfly is so out there and weird, is because he didn't want to make a bunch of commercial songs to please the studio.
Okay, that makes sense.
Did not know that.
I really like Kendrick Lamar.
He must have had a lot of clout to get away with that. Usually studios are pretty...
His first studio went wild. And you think about his second album won a Grammy. So, I mean, he's one of the... I'm not kidding. He's like, if there was a Mount Rushmore of hip-hop, they're setting aside a place for his face.
They're casting out all the Native Americans on their holy land to do it.
But he'll make an album about how wrong it is, so it's okay. Corey, go ahead.
At what point does that become completely futile? Where you're like Rage Against the Machine and you've got $40 million singing about how awful commercialism and consumerism and making money.
Where's
and,
my royalty checks?
And the evil capitalists ruining the society.
Just as soon
as... Oh, by the way, we're going to Woodstock.
Just as soon as the public catches on.
All right, so my number one, it's like Hot Fuss. I picked Two Lefts Don't Make a Right, but Three Do by Relient K. Again, not the album I would pick right now as my favorite one, but definitely the one that I like the most overall, like, historically. It was the first Relient K album I listened to, but I think that was only the... was it the second or the third one?
Third. It was the third.
Okay.
Was it? I thought it was their second.
Because it's Relient K, I mean, self-titled, then it's The Anatomy of the Tongue-in-Cheek, and then it's Two Lefts Don't Make a Right, but Three Do.
Yes, you are correct. Again, I like it a lot. It was my...
I had the knowledge.
I had whatever the Christian version of No, That's What I Call Music was.
Oh, wait. I remember that. Was it Wow?
Wow, yes. I had one of the DVDs.
I was going to be, Now That's What I'm Praying is music.
Oh, wait. Did it have the music video for...
Chapstick, Chaplips?
We had that chemistry. Same DVD.
Yes.
I watched that DVD.
That's how
it... Did they all have fanny packs when they're walking around?
It had 12 stones.
All right.
It did.
Oh
man,
Third Day, and I don't think it had DC Talk. I think they were gone by that point.
So that's how I heard about them.
Jars of Clay.
I've been listening to Relient K ever since. Standout tracks are Mood Rings. I love that song.
That's a great song.
Forward Motion is really good. Trademark is really good.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the last one? Oh yeah, Jefferson Airplane.
That's a super good song.
That's a hidden...
I love
like
Jefferson Airplane.
Song.
Yeah. That's actually a
it's
great
song. It's like the
song.
Old-fashioned... And this is like old-fashioned hidden track. Like, I had the CD.
Yeah.
And, what's the last... The last track is...
Is it When I Go Down?
From End to End.
Oh.
And then, so it's like, from end to end, song's over. Oh, what a cool song. Like, 11 minutes later...
It comes
Jefferson
on.
Airplane,
and starts. You only like discover it by accident by letting
yeah,
your
like
stereo
11
go.
Minutes of silence, and then the last song starts playing. That's one of the best songs on that album.
Yeah,
and they just like shoehorned it away.
I think,
which is really cool.
I love that version, but I think the superior, in my opinion, the superior version of that song is on the Birds and the B-Sides, or is it the Nashville Tennessee?
I didn't know another version of that song came out.
Yeah,
of Jefferson Airplane.
Yep.
Oh, really?
I'd recommend listening to it. That's my favorite version.
I absolutely will look.
What was different about it? Did they just redo it, or was it different style?
Yeah, it's a different pace. It's got acoustic instruments. I think it was the demo version, actually.
Okay.
So obviously they not Popeyes. They weren't like, Popeyes. Popeye. you know, they didn't completely. You know, make it super poppy, catchy.
Yeah.
Like, it's still obviously a very good song by itself, but...
I just remembered I might have to update my favorite song list.
Okay. I remembered a song that I'm trying to wrestle with if I want to put on there, too. I'm with you.
I just remembered that one existed. I've got five... Okay, so here's my dilemma. I'm adding a fifth song to this song, or to this list, and I have to decide on three of them by the time we go around and start counting down our songs, which we should probably do soon, because we're running short on time here.
Have fun.
Oh, yeah. All right, are you done with your number one?
Yep, I'm done.
Okay. My number one is Morning Phase by Beck. That is probably the greatest exposition of musicianship I've ever experienced.
All aboard the musicianship.
not really wordsmith.
He plays, he plays every instrument on the album. He sings. It's sonically one of the best mixed albums I've ever heard in my life. It's going to be a little monotonous for most people, I think. It's kind of a chill album that you kind of have to get into when you're listening to it, and you have to be, it's kind of a right mood type thing. But
when you're in that mood and you play that album, boy, you start, it's the greatest experience of your life.
But yeah, it's extremely good. It's nothing like his early stuff where he had like a bunch of non sequitur lyrics that made absolutely no sense over like weird hip hop beats or whatever he was doing back then, which isn't bad. I like some of that stuff. But this is more of a folky, down to earth, emotional trip. So yeah, that's pretty much all I got to say about that. Listen to it. You better listen to it.
You owe us.
You owe us.
My number one, I had a really hard time. I kind of wanted to choose something that like would show off how deep I am and how sophisticated my taste is. Mm-hmm. But then I realized that I'm almost 30 and I don't care what anybody that listens to this, I don't care if you look down. My number one album is Blink-182 by Blink-182.
Mm-hmm.
As I get older, Blink-182 is a really hard band to defend. Because especially in the early stuff, I mean, if you want to talk about studio manipulation, they were a band genetically engineered to speak to rebellious youth. Mm-hmm. I mean, they said the F word, they talked about humping dogs, they basically just did the same four chord progression everywhere, mm-hmm. and said in super nasally voices, you know, authority sucks, teens have the rules, and it's really, I can't listen to more than 5 minutes of it in general now. But Blink-182 by Blink-182, which was the last real album I think they made when they were actually a cohesive unit before they took their first break and fell apart and tried to get back together.
Before one of them retired to hunt aliens.
Yeah. and they really pushed themselves lyrically. And actually, one thing I did this week that I didn't do last week was I listened to the whole thing again. And it really holds up. They've got some dark, crunchy guitar in there, some real good texture. The lyrics, I'm not going to sit here and say that they're poetry, but man, are they better than most Blink-182 lyrics.
They actually tried.
Yeah, and it really shows. And I mean, there's a lot of emotion in it. I think that this was probably their most honest album. I don't think they were trying to create a product so much as they were trying to really, if you research it, they were going through some things personally too, and I think that really comes through. I'll just say key tracks of this is Down, which is such a cool, unique song.
I love that song.
I'm Lost Without You, which is one of the best closers. That's a song, like this whole album, when I listen to it, I lots of memories through my life. All the way back to my first kiss and the breakup that almost immediately followed, probably not unrelated to the first kiss and how bad it was. And so these songs like carry the emotions of it. Obvious, which is just a good crunchy song.
Which song is The Cure on?
All of This. That's the last one I was going to mention. Song. All of This. That's kind of like the breakup song for me.
That's a good one. It's, well, I mean, good in a depressing way.
Yeah, it really speaks to the emotions that come with a breakup. So even if you hate Blink-182, I really would still suggest to give it a shot. It's my unapologetic number one, and I'll go ahead and hand it back.
Sam's staring me down.
I'll go ahead and I'll hand it back to Corey.
Sam knows I'm not a huge Blink fan.
It's
just the vocals. I just have a really hard time.
Like I said, I can't defend them. Blink-182 is like, it's like a guilty pleasure, but this one song rises above that. Mm-hmm. Or that one album.
I will legitimately check it out.
Okay.
Because I've never even tried
it. It's very different.
Okay.
From their early
stuff. That's fine with me.
Yeah.
All right, let's go. Songs number three.
I'm committing.
All right, do it.
Cliffs of Dover. Oh!
You stole that!
I'm sorry, sir.
Now I gotta do some on-the-fly adjustments here.
So I'll give Tom some time. There's something about certain songs that I really like, and it's the idea that I think to be a great song, it has to be a song that's great in a vacuum. It's not at all related to who wrote it, or what band, or a time period, or a fad, or whatever. Like, that song could have come out anonymously. That song could have washed up in a USB stick in a bottle on the ocean shore, and it would have gotten famous just because of how good it was, right? And that's what Cliffs of Dover is. It's just a really, really, really good song. I don't know if you know Sam. It's a instrumental song by the guitarist Eric Johnson. He didn't really have a career until that song. I mean, he was good and people knew who he was in those circles, but he wrote Cliffs of Dover and became like a megastar basically because that song was so good. And he never really wrote anything that was as good since, but he's just like literally made his entire career off of the fact that he wrote one incredible song. And I think all of my songs are like that too, where I think they're all really good songs and would, it's not like some Lady Gaga single or something where it's famous because it's a Lady Gaga single. I want stuff that stands on its own.
That's a song that no matter what mood I'm in, if I listen to it, makes me happy. Like, mm-hmm. it's just a genuinely, The guy's an artist. You listen to the live version and you like you feel the freaking emotion he's putting out in that song.
It's incredible. I don't think Sam's heard it. Have you heard it?
I have not.
We'll have to play it for Sam after this.
If I'm being this quiet, then I mean I chances are I just have no idea.
Yeah, we'll have to play it for you after this.
Oh, I'm not so respectful good. By nature, so it's not like I would just be like, oh, Corey needs this chance to represent what he's saying. It's because I have
But if you've heard the song and you haven't heard the live version, listen to the live in Austin, Texas version. It's so good. Like the guy's an artist. He's like just a craftsman of shreds.
Of the guitar.
Of the geeter.
All right. Well, that was pronounced guitar.
I think it's the geeter. I'm sorry.
I mean, I've been playing it for
I'm Googling it right now. Guitar.
It's No, those are the crocodile things.
Yeah.
Gators.
Ba-dum-tsh. All right.
Hi-oh.
That's all what right. they pay us for.
All right. Well, that wouldn't have been my number three. It was going to be my number two. So
I'm glad I didn't steal a number one. That would have sucked.
So my number three is Baba O'Reilly by The Who. That's everybody knows it as Teenage Wasteland. That's not the actual name of the song. But I can't be the only person who's heard this song.
Well, of course I've heard this song. Yeah.
It has the synthesizer intro. It doesn't have a verse chorus setup. It's just a song. It just goes start to finish.
I wouldn't have thought of that song for my list, but if I had, I probably would have put it on. Mm.
I really like the part where there's music.
Yeah.
You've never heard Baba O'Reilly?
I've never heard Baba
O'Reilly.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
We got to make a playlist here or something.
I'd give it a shot.
You would like it. I know you'd like it, actually.
Really?
Yep.
Maybe it's one of those that you'd put on and I would recognize it right away.
It's a legit like rock anthem, basically. It's like, I think, the pinnacle of their career, like that song. Or maybe you won't get fooled again. They're both on the same album, though, so who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah, so great song. Listen to it. And I'm sure our listeners have probably heard it somewhere in some capacity.
I'm sure you have.
But listen to it again. It's super good.
All right. Are we moving to me?
Yes.
All right. So I'm just going to go ahead and say right now, my three are real downers.
No,
I tried really hard to like think of like happy songs. And I'm sure there is one. Like I'm not 100% happy with my list. But I actually thought pretty hard about it. And these were the three that I kept coming back to. My first one is Casimir Pulaski Day by Sufjan Stevens.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Super powerful song about a young man who has his first kiss with a girl who goes on to die of bone cancer.
Yep.
Very poetic. The music is incredible through it. There's incredible imagery. I could read it, and you would think that I was just reading you a really good
album. I listened to that album. Come on, Feel the Noise. It's a super good album. It didn't make my list, but it's really good. Listen to it.
But there's just this recurring thing about the way that she she doesn't tie her shoes. She tucks in her shirt, but she doesn't tie her shoes. And when she runs out of a party after they have their first kiss, he wants to run after her. And then at the very end of the song, in her coffin, she has the same look, the shirt tucked in and the shoes untied. And it's like he wants to follow her to death. That's just one example. And you can analyze this song for days because there's lots of powerful stuff like that. Songs like this don't come out very often. People don't put this much work into music.
Yeah.
And they don't arrange it so well that as soon as it hits you like a cannonball. And it's like something you don't like to listen to, but you can't stop, in my opinion.
In one line of that song, he completely flips the entire feeling you're having when he says, because you have cancer of the bone, like that. The way he says that, it like kind of comes out of nowhere, and then as soon as you hear it, you're like, "Oh, geez."
It's not like manipulative. It's not like there's some songs that come out like "God Bless the USA" that are just made to manipulate you into like buying a sports car,
cowboy hat.
Yeah. This song is because it captures so much more than just "Oh, I had a friend and she died." Yeah. It like goes into the innocence of youth because like he has his first kiss and he talks about how he brushes his hand against her blouse and how it makes him feel and all these kinds of things. And then it goes into how he wrestles with it even goes as deep into how he wrestles with his religion afterward. Like I'll just read these last few lines. I can't help myself. It's all the glory that the Lord has made and the complications when I see his face in the morning in the window. All the glory when he took our place, but he took my shoulders and he shook my face and he takes and he takes. And he takes. That's just incredible.
Yeah, that's really good.
I'm sorry. I've got goosebumps just reading that. And I'm like, I'm a nerd, guys.
The guy's an artiste. Like, he's super good at what he does.
Next level. Yeah. Super depressing, but just great all the way through.
Yeah. He's really good at the depressing stuff, which is kind of a shame, honestly. Because, like, his most depressing songs are easily his most powerful ones. Like, this whole new album, Carrie and Lowell, is...
Which is actually my favorite album that he's done.
Yeah.
But it is depressing from start to...
Yeah, absolutely. But it's powerful nonetheless, so...
All right, that's my number three.
All right, number two.
I can make a decision here.
My number two is, compared to that explanation, is going to be quite...
All right, I'll help you then.
All right.
Instrumedley, Dream Theater.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
So Dream Theater does a thing on basically every album. They do like a 15-minute instrumental song. So then when they played live at Budokan, they took the most difficult sections of every one of those songs and put them all together and called it the Instrumedley, like the medley of instrumentals.
That's really cool.
And it's not as long as any of the individual ones, but it is genuinely one of the most insane displays of musicianship I've seen ever or heard. Because, like, imagine the most difficult section of music you've heard in your life, and it's, like, 13 minutes of that. Like, it's these people who, like spent their entire life perfecting this craft, and they hone it down into, like, one song. And it is ridiculous and amazing. None of the sections last longer than, like, 20 or 30 seconds. But it all flows together really well and sounds really good. I think, Sam, I've sent you individual parts of it that you thought were pretty cool. But, again, I'm not sure you don't seem like the... I don't think you'd stick in with it very well.
I can appreciate really, really complex musical arrangements. I really mm-hmm. can. If you're talking about that one YouTube video you sent me of them live, I watched all of it, and I was really impressed. When the keyboard and the bass and the guitar are all doing the same crazy solo, that's incredible.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's not something that I like listen to for fun.
Oh,
but
totally.
That's like looking
at painting. Totally get that. That's like, as far as music goes, that's pretty obscure, and most people are... And I totally get it. And I also have a fairly hard time defending how self-indulging it is.
Yeah, that's on the live Budokan album only.
Yeah, yep. I don't think they ever played it anywhere else. I don't think they played that version ever again.
Well, how much practice would that take to do that? Incredible. Yeah, that was... I mean, they're already insanely talented just listening to their music, but when you take that and it's all the most ridiculous, like you were saying, the ridiculous parts stacked on top of each other, it's like it's a new tier of insanity.
Tom, number two.
All right. So this one is, well, it just embodies rock and roll, I think, to me. And it's Rock and Roll Damnation by AC/DC. It's on their album Powerage.
Yep.
Which, if anybody listening that knows me knows, I went through a hefty AC/DC period in my life where about for a year and a half, that's all I listened to was just AC/DC. But I think this is their greatest song that they ever wrote. And it's early on. Bon Scott was still alive. And it's just a great rock and roll song. It gets you like excited and amped to be listening to rock and roll, and it's just, you know, it's AC/DC, so I mean it doesn't take extreme amounts of talent, but the attitude just bleeds out.
They're just so... Has a band ever defined a genre so much ever? Like, they are rock and roll. AC/DC is rock and roll.
AC/DC is like, and Van Halen are like the two classic rock bands that I'll actually stand by. I like them a lot.
Yeah, and like their music isn't nearly the depth that like a band like Dream Theater is or anything. Obviously they play basically every song has the same four chords, but just the tone and the attitude and how everything blends together, it doesn't take talent, but it sounds good. Like, it's just great stuff.
Awesome. I really thought somebody was going to take my number two from me. I hope that's neither of your number ones.
Go for it.
It's like, well, I'm not even going to elaborate on it too much. It's Hurt by Johnny Cash.
I didn't think of it. That excellent choice.
You don't mean the Disturbed cover?
Did Disturbed cover that song?
No, Disturbed cover The Sound of Silence.
Oh, yeah. We were raging about
that. Just a travesty. Yeah. If you want to see the problem with commercialization of music, just listen to The Sound of Silence.
Was that last week we did that?
Yeah.
Oh, my. Can we rant about that again just for a second?
Yeah.
What a trash cover that is.
It's garbage.
And the whole world loved it.
And everyone,
stupid.
I know people very well who think that is amazing, and I think less of them because of it.
I've heard people say it's better than the original
version. I genuinely thought I was like at the end of a Twilight Zone episode where I'm the only one running around thinking like,
am I taking crazy pills?
Here's the thing. Disturbed does not have the gravity to cover The Sound of Silence and give it any kind of justice.
Nah.
They just don't. And the whole thing, it's funny, is that the sound of silence is all about like a dystopian future where everything's become about money and nobody's in it for each other. And like, it's about the rise of commercialism to a point where there's like nothing else, in my opinion. I imagine there's whole essays written about what it's about. That's kind of what I get when I listen to it. And then you have Disturbed cover it for money. And it becomes the number one.
And then you go on Jimmy Kimmel and you wear a leather jacket and you sing it with soft lights. And it's supposed to be all of a sudden like the most amazing thing anyone's ever done.
Of all the bands to have like a black and white music video where instruments are getting smashed because they're like, rock and roll is dead. You're like, Disturbed?
Come on, man.
Oh, man.
You haven't earned
that. Oh, I hate it. All right.
Some covers just make me
so go ahead. Hurt Johnny Cash.
Everybody's heard this. I'm not going to speak too much
about it. Excellent song.
It's one of those songs, what I Johnny Cash had added so much to it. You can feel his whole life in every word he sings because he was sick at the time. It's one of the last songs he recorded. And even Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails, who wrote the song originally, said, okay, that's your song. I can't hang.
I don't even like the original that much, I have to say.
The original's okay.
I didn't like it. It's really weird. I mean, it's a Trent Reznor song.
Yeah.
But I like parts of it.
It sounds whiny coming from him. From Johnny Cash, you're like, this guy earned the right to sing this song. Yes.
And just the way he uses such small things to create such a huge impact. That one key on the piano that everybody knows from the song, that do, that they add in when it starts getting emotional, and it feels like a tsunami.
Yeah. I like it because it builds so much tension, but it never goes anywhere.
Yeah.
It just like, it's like constant driving, and then it ends. And then you're just back at the verse again, and it never resolved at all. And you still have that tension, but now you're in the second verse, but and then the chorus, and a bridge, and like, you go through the whole song, and you keep building that, like, and it grows in intensity and volume and power.
You feel the drug addiction, you feel the loss of his wife, you feel who knows what years of being one of the biggest faces of rock on the planet at a time when, like,
I mean, he was one of those famous people that ever lived.
Yeah.
And he's there at the end of his life when it's all over, singing about what it all meant.
He had number ones in almost, like, at the whatever genres were available at the time. Like, he was all, like, he was the king, man. Besides Elvis, obviously, but, you know.
And the music video is great, too, if you can look it up. But yeah, Hurt by Johnny Cash.
Oh, that's such a great song.
Yeah.
I'm glad only one of us thought of it, because I definitely would have put that on my list. My number one, Deathbed, Reliant K.
Really?
Oh, okay.
That's a great song.
I like that song a lot.
There's a lot of emotion in that song as well.
There is a lot of emotion in that song. And it's kind of a testament to Reliant K to write a song with Christian themes that's not like, just kill me.
Sappy. Yeah, it handles it really, really well.
Yeah. Like, you can actually write a song with religious themes or theistic themes and, like, actually handle it well.
Yeah.
And, like, maintain artistic integrity instead of just...
That's the kind of song I really love that tells a story. Yeah. I love songs that tell a story.
And, like, the Sufjan Stevens song, like you said, like, it's so rare for someone to put that much effort in a song. I mean, and for a Reliant K song, it's, like, 12 minutes long or something. Mm-hmm. That's a long Reliant K song.
Yeah. That instrumental part in the, like, right at the end of the initial part before John Foreman from Switchfoot comes in?
Yes.
It does a good job of kind of like summing up and like building up the hopes almost, because it's a very hopeful song. Because
it tells part of the story is told with just the instrumentals, and it's really cool, and it's really implicit. Like, you're not sitting there wondering what it could be about. Like, you genuinely just the progression that you're hearing in the music is just part of the way that the story is being told. It's part of the progression of events.
Mm-hmm.
And that's super cool. Really, really emotional. Every single note is perfectly placed. Mm-hmm. I think there's something like 30 different instruments in that song.
Oh yeah.
Like, in the full final mastered version, there's like 30 something instruments in that song.
Oh yeah.
It was very, very deliberate. It's about as far from, hey, let's write a song as you can be. Like, it's really just a story, and I like it a lot.
I like that it starts with the door to the studio opening, and he sits down on the piano. I think that was a nice touch.
I like that a lot.
But, yeah. And plus, again, Matt Thiessen is a freaking lyrical master. That guy can craft lyrics for any song.
Yeah, I was thinking about that this week because we said it last week.
this whole episode just needs to be called we said last week.
No, it's true. I genuinely can't think of anybody that's consistently written lyrics that I think are as good as Matt Thiessen's. I mean, there's songs that I've heard 80 times that I listen to again and hear something I didn't hear before. Yeah. Or hear the same thing in like a third different way. Or like, that guy's just insane.
He's a witty fella. I'll tell you what.
I really like Reliant K. I don't think I love him as much as you guys do.
Mm-hmm.
I
don't listen to him that much anymore, but...
They came around at the perfect time in my life, I think. So
yeah.
They've just stuck
with me. That's one of the songs that stuck with me. I still go back to it every once in a while.
And they've evolved so much as a band over the years.
I really like their newer stuff.
Yeah.
I really like Forget Not Slow Down.
That's an excellent
album. Yeah. But I would consider them like Blink-182, but with talent. That's kind of how I think of them.
Yeah.
All right.
So my number one, I don't know if either of you guys have heard it or heard of the artist, but maybe. It's the Stable Song by Gregory Alan Isakoff.
Nope.
He's a indie folk singer. I can't really... Basically, it came around, and this is going to sound real sappy, but this is a song me and my now wife listened to when we first started dating.
Aww.
And it carries a lot of fond memories and emotion there, and I...
We know what that means.
But, I don't know, listen to it. It's just a really good folk with, like, hefty meaning, and there's a lot of emotion in the song itself. So I think it's worth listening even without it being specific to my life. So sweet. I would recommend checking it out. The whole album's pretty good, too. It's That See the Gambler, so...
Cool.
If you like indie folk, that's a good place to start.
My number one is Moon River by Frank Sinatra.
Is it?
Yeah, for real. And here's some advice to you fellas out there. And this is real talk. If you're on a first date and music comes up, even if you don't mean it, tell the girl across from you that you love Moon River by Frank Sinatra. I don't know what it is, but they melt when they hear that. This is tried and tested. I'm not like a player. I'm terrible. I'm lucky to be married. I've never been good at women, but I went on a lot of terrible first dates. And the only time I ever felt like I was getting anywhere with the person across from me was when I'd say, oh yeah, my favorite song is Moon River by Frank Sinatra. And they'd go, aw.
Are you trying to seduce me?
See? Corey's looking at the chaps just because I'm sitting across from looking at the eyes while I'm
saying. Speaking of crooners and the moon, Blue Moon by Dean Martin is also great.
Cool, that's not what I'm talking about.
I know, I'm just saying. Ooh, I'm just saying, crooners like to sing about the moon. Maybe there's a werewolf angle no one's considered yet, but I'd like to
I prefer werewolves from London.
That's the conspiracy. That's the conspiracy we need to unrail, is how all the big-time crooners were werewolves.
Werewolves of London.
That's it. Werewolves. Anyways.
Anyway, lycanthropy. Right. Like lycanthropy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But one of my... if we were watching Inside Out by Disney... And one of the core memories that make up a person, one of mine would be I was out in the field at field exercise in the Army, and I was smoking a cigarette back when I was able to do that, which don't start because, oh, my God, is it so good. very hard to stop. But I was smoking a cigarette. I was in a gun pit, and I was sitting there back in the mud, all that kind of good stuff that I hated. I'm not going to pretend like I was a gruff. I hated every second of it. But I had my iPod on, which I wasn't supposed to. I was listening to Moon River and some air defense artillery. They were doing an exercise into the field kind of far away from us, launched in the air, these rockets. And it's like something you've never seen, the way these trails light up and the whole sky lit up and the clouds were echoed and the fire of these missiles going up while I was listening to Moon River. And it's just, I'll die and that might be the last thing I see in my head. It's something that I can't replicate or even explain. Just picture the most amazing thing you've ever seen and times it by 10. And that's how I feel about this image in my head.
That's
and,
pretty cool.
Yeah. Moon River, just it's just one of those songs that really encapsulates what it's like to go through life. We're always drifting around trying to find purpose. That's what I attribute to it. And he sings it so well. Frank Sinatra is the man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's a good voice. He was kind of a scumbag, but
yeah,
he's got a good voice.
I didn't say he was a good man. I didn't say he was good. He's like Kanye West. He's like, we put up with him.
Because he's really good.
But yeah, I'll stop there. It's a great song. Everybody, only by the Frank Sinatra version. I've listened to it by other people, and I don't like it as much.
Yeah, he does a fantastic job on that one, I think. All right. That was our...
That was our top three.
Yeah, no, top three albums, top three songs. What did we learn today, everybody?
I learned that every single... Disturbed is the best band of all time. All right. And they should cover every song ever written so that we can have the best version of every song ever written. That's what I learned.
I learned that crooners are probably werewolves based on their infatuation with the moon.
That was mine. Let me see if I learned anything else. Let's see if I learned anything else. That the Beastie Boys were probably werewolves too.
How do you know that?
Because the beast, it's in the name. It's one of those hiding in plain sight Illuminati things.
All right. We've stumbled upon a conspiracy years in the making. I think most recording artists are probably werewolves.
That's how they sing so well. Yeah, that's how they stretch out those notes. Got it bad, got it bad, got it bad. I'm hot for teacher.
All right, we got to end this. Get me out of here.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Again, from the bottom of our hearts here.
From the bottom of my shallow heart.
From the bottom of my bowels.
My ice cold heart. Thank you for listening. Thanks for all your support. Please consider telling your friends and browbeating them until they listen to our podcast.
Let's get off our knees here. Let's not beg. We're prouder than that.
Please. Yeah.
Bye.
This has been Tom,
Sam Big Irish,
and Corey Slavic Donor.
Signing off of the Talk Shop. Be back next week at some point, probably, unless we lose another episode. So
better. It looks good. The waveforms look good.
TTYL, everybody.